So imagine you're selling this cramped, maybe like 1400 square foot ranch house from the 1960s.
Right, like a totally average, maybe even outdated house.
Yeah, exactly, an average house. But you hand over the keys, and immediately you are moving into this modern 2400 square foot luxury home with a pristine view of a snow-capped volcano.
Which sounds like a dream.
It does. But here is the crazy part. You walk into this new home and you realize you have absolutely zero mortgage, like none.
You own it entirely outright.
Outright. And sitting on your kitchen island is essentially a duffel bag containing $700,000 in tax-advantaged cash.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the pitch for a late-night real estate infomercial, right?
Totally.
But the mechanics behind this are actually completely grounded in reality.
Yeah.
It is this highly specific, highly calculated geographic arbitrage.
And that is exactly our mission for you today. We are looking at one very specific migration corridor for this deep dive. We're talking about Californians who are just, pulling the ripcord, cashing out of the Los Angeles and Bay Area markets, and moving straight to Bellingham, Washington.
Straight up the coast?
Exactly. And we're basing today's deep dive on this remarkably candid, deeply analytical relocation guide and cost analysis. It was written by a Whatcom County real estate broker who, they field calls from exhausted California buyers literally constantly.
Every single week.
Right. And they aren't trying to sell you a sunset here. They are presenting the blunt financial math, the severe climate trade-offs, and the logistical reality of buying a house 900 miles away.
Because we aren't here to hype this up for you. We are here to really look at the numbers and see if this trade actually works.
And trade is the perfect word for it, honestly.
It really is, because you cannot make a move like this without leaving something significant behind. Like, you are trading sunshine for liquidity.
Right.
You are trading speed for space. It's this systemic lifestyle shift that is sort of disguised as a real estate transaction.
Okay, well, let's unpack this. We have to start with the catalyst, right? The thing that sets this entire chain reaction into motion for you. Why is this specific migration path, like California to Bellingham, so incredibly active right now?
Well, it comes down to one phrase, really: trapped equity.
It's trapped equity.
Yeah. I mean, if you have owned home in California through the last decade, or worse, the last 2 decades, you are likely sitting on just a staggering amount of unrealized wealth.
Just massive numbers on a screen.
Exactly. You have a net worth that looks incredible on a spreadsheet, but it is entirely illiquid. It is physically locked inside the drywall of your house.
Right. You can't use it to buy groceries.
No. And you can't use it to fund your kids' college tuition without taking on, a massive loan. And you certainly can't use it to retire. It is wealth that exists only on paper until a transaction actually occurs.
I always look at trapped equity almost like potential energy in physics.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Like, imagine you have this massive boulder sitting at the top of a very tall hill. That boulder has an incredible amount of potential energy, just like a $1.5 million house in San Jose.
Right.
But that energy isn't actually doing any work for you. It's just sitting there in the dirt. The only way to convert that potential energy into kinetic energy, into cash flow that you can actually use to propel your life forward, is to push the boulder down the hill.
You have to sell the asset.
You just sell it and extract the capital.
That is a phenomenal analogy. And the steepness of that hill, the sheer volume of potential energy,
Yeah.
is what drives this specific Bellingham move.
Let's look at the baseline numbers from the broker's analysis just to set the stage for you. Right now, the median single-family home in Bellingham is trading for roughly $690,000.
Which, I mean, objectively is still a very substantial amount of money.
Oh, it absolutely is. But, everything is relative. Because the median home price in San Francisco right now is roughly $1.4 million.
It's just wild. Yeah, and the greater Bay Area composite hovers near 1.2 million. Down in Los Angeles City, it's around 950,000, and many of the desirable LA suburbs push well past that million-dollar mark.
Right, easily.
So if you've owned in California for any significant amount of time, your boulder has a massive amount of potential energy. You are sitting on anywhere from $300,000 to well over $1 million in just trapped equity.
Let's actually walk through the classic case study that the source outlines here, because this is where the math stops being abstract for you and starts getting, very visceral. This is the scenario playing out over and over again.
Okay, yeah. Let's take a couple living on the peninsula in the Bay Area. They own a 1,400 square foot ranch house built in the 1960s.
Right.
It's a great location, obviously, but the house is cramped, the plumbing is aging, you know, lacks modern amenities. They sell that home for $1.5 million.
I just want to pause and have you visualize that. 1,400 square feet, built during the Kennedy administration, selling for $1.5 million.
It's wild.
Yeah.
But exactly. Now, they don't get to keep all of that, obviously.
Right. There's friction.
Lots of friction. You have to pay the California transfer taxes, the real estate commissions, maybe some staging costs to get it ready.
Yeah.
After all that transactional friction, they net roughly $1.4 million in pure cash.
Okay. $1.4 million hits the bank account.
Yeah. So they take that capital, they pack up the moving truck, and they head north to Bellingham. With that $1.4 million, they purchase a 2,400-square-foot home built in, say, 2005.
So a much newer, much bigger house.
Much bigger. It has an open floor plan, modern wiring, a dedicated home office, a large yard, and crucially, a view of Mount Baker.
Wow.
The all-in cost for this Bellingham home, $700,000.
So they don't even look at current mortgage rates. Like, they don't even talk to a bank.
Not at all. They just wire the funds and own the property free and clear.
They pay cash. The mortgage just vanishes entirely from their lives.
Exactly. And because they netted $1.4 million, and only spent $700,000, they have $700,000 left over.
That is the duffel bag of cash.
That's the duffel bag right there. It's just sitting in their investment accounts, generating yield, completely available for immediate use.
Okay, but wait, I have to push back here a little bit.
Sure.
Because the math is undeniably staggering, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But are we just swapping zip codes? I mean, let's be real. Can a pile of money actually buy peace of mind? Or do people just go through the massive trauma of moving, rent the U-Haul, drive up Interstate 5, and just, you know, unpack all their California stress in the new living room?
Right, like wherever you go, there you are.
Exactly. You can take the person out of the rat race, but can you really take the rat race out of the person?
Well, this raises a really important question, and the Broker's Guide addresses this psychological transition head on. The answer is that your nervous system doesn't instantly reset the day you close escrow.
I wouldn't think so.
No, you do bring your stress with you for the first few months, but the financial reality actually follows a physiological reset eventually.
Really?
Yeah. Think about the underlying mechanics of chronic stress. For many Californians, their baseline anxiety is completely tied to the carrying cost of their life.
The burn rate.
The burn rate.
Yeah.
The crushing weight of a $6,000 a month mortgage, the property taxes on a $1.5 million assessment, the constant, you know, low-grade terror that if they lose their high-stress tech job, they will be out on the street in 3 months because their monthly expenses are just so incredibly high.
Right. You are running on a treadmill that is steadily speeding up and you can never, ever hit the stop button.
Exactly. But when you move to Bellingham and execute this equity reset, you permanently delete your largest monthly expense. The treadmill just stops.
Because the housing cost is gone.
Gone. You aren't operating in survival mode anymore.
Right.
You have a $700,000 buffer. When you have zero debt and massive liquidity, a bad day at work is just a bad day at work.
It's not the end of the world.
Right. It's not an existential threat to your family's survival.
Mm.
An unexpected $2,000 car repair doesn't induce panic.
It fundamentally alters your tolerance for corporate nonsense, too. I mean, you don't have to say yes to every unreasonable demand from your boss when your house is fully paid off. You suddenly have leverage over your own time again.
That's a huge piece of it.
Mm.
The source notes that most transplants describe their nervous system genuinely calming down within 4 to 6 months.
That fast, huh?
Yeah, it takes roughly half a year for the body to realize the threat matrix has actually changed, to realize, you know, oh, I'm safe. I don't have to sprint at 110 miles an hour just to afford the right to live in this zip code.
Okay, that brings us to the next massive piece of this puzzle for you. Because the one-time $700,000 injection of cash is incredible. Erasing the mortgage is incredible. But life still costs money every single day.
You still have to buy groceries.
Right. You still have to pay for groceries, insurance, power, and obviously taxes. So let's calculate the ongoing month-to-month reality of this move.
This is where the financial argument moves from just a one-time windfall to an ongoing systemic generational advantage. We have to examine the state tax flip.
And this is where I need to proactively run some calculations with you, because California versus Washington state taxes feels like a heavyweight fight where one side doesn't even bother to show up to the ring.
It's pretty one-sided.
Yeah. California state income tax tops out at up to 13.3%. Washington State has a 0% state income tax.
0%.
Wait, like zero income tax.
Zero.
Let's just stop and think about the societal mechanics of that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I have driven through Washington. The roads are paved. The traffic lights work.
They do.
There are public schools, fire departments, and state parks. Mm-hmm. How does a functioning society pay its teachers and pave its highways without collecting a single dime of income tax from its citizens?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of civic infrastructure, it's a brilliant question. Washington is not a tax-free utopia.
Right. They have to get the money somehow.
Exactly. They just extract their revenue through entirely different mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of taxing your labor, you know, your income, they heavily tax your consumption and your real estate transactions.
Okay, walk me through the mechanisms. Where is the state actually making its money?
The primary engines are the sales tax and the real estate excise tax, or REIT.
REIT, okay.
Yeah. Bellingham sales tax sits at roughly 8.7%. Now, compared to Los Angeles at 9.5% or parts of the Bay Area at 9.25%, that actually feels like a slight discount to a California.
Sure, it's slightly lower.
But it is still a significant regressive tax on almost everything you buy. You are paying a premium at the register. Furthermore, Washington State levies a heavy excise tax when you sell property, which is what funds a lot of local and state capital projects.
So they get you when you buy a TV, and they get you when you eventually sell the house.
Exactly.
What about property taxes? Because if there's no income tax, I just assume property taxes must be absolutely brutal.
Well, this is where the math gets incredibly counterintuitive. Bellingham's effective property tax rate is around 0.9%. That is actually higher than California's average effective rate, which hovers around 0.75%, thanks to Proposition 13 capping assessments down there.
Hold on, wait. The rate is higher. So a Californian moving north is actually signing up for a higher property tax rate?
Yes.
How does that possibly save them money?
Because of what that rate is actually applied to.
Oh.
Right. The rate is a slightly wider slice, but the pie itself is dramatically smaller. In California, you are paying that 0.75% on a home assessed at $1.5 million. In Bellingham, you are paying 0.9% on a home assessed at maybe $690,000 or $700,000.
No, I see.
Your absolute out-of-pocket tax bill drops significantly because the baseline value of your asset is so much lower, even though the physical house itself is larger and nicer.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. It's the difference between a small percentage of a massive number versus a slightly larger percentage of a tiny number.
Exactly.
So knowing that the structural costs are basically handled by sales tax and property tax, let's look at the income tax savings. What does going from 13.3% to 0% actually mean for a family's checking account?
The source provides exact concrete examples for this. Let's look at a dual-income Bay Area family making $300,000 combined.
Pretty standard for tech.
Very standard. By moving their residency to Bellingham, that family saves roughly $24,000 every single year in state income taxes.
$24,000 a year.
Yeah.
That is a $2,000 a month raise. That's pure, unadulterated cash flow that you suddenly get to keep just for changing the logo on your driver's license.
And it scales up drastically. Take a higher-earning tech couple pulling in $500,000 combined. Their state income tax savings jump to closer to $50,000 annually.
That is life-changing money.
It is. And this is particularly massive for retirees, too. A retiree with a robust pension and Social Security might save $15,000 to $25,000 a year that previously was automatically siphoned off to Sacramento.
But the guide doesn't just stop at taxes, right? It talks about these silent savers, which I found to be one of the most compelling parts of the whole analysis. Because everyone looks at income tax, but nobody really thinks about the friction costs of daily life until they actually have to live it.
Exactly. The day-to-day friction costs in California are just exorbitant. Let's look at auto insurance, for instance.
Right, yeah, LA traffic.
Right. If you live in Los Angeles, your premium is calculated based on LA traffic density, LA accident rates, and LA uninsured motorist statistics. The average auto insurance premium in L.A. is around $2,500 a year.
Yeah, that sounds right.
When you register that exact same car in Bellingham, your premium drops to roughly $1,400. You are saving over $1,000 a year just because you are driving in a less chaotic environment.
That makes total sense.
And gas prices drop, too, from the $4.70 to $4.80 range down to around $4.20.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting, though. The absolute biggest silent saver mentioned in the source is actually the electricity bill.
Oh, this is a phenomenal localized advantage. Whatcom County, where Bellingham is situated, is plugged into this incredibly robust, historically stable hydroelectric power grid. They purchase their power wholesale from the Bonneville Power Administration.
Let's explain the mechanics of that for the listener, because it's genuinely brilliant. We're talking about the snowpack in the Cascade Mountains melting, right?
Right.
Flowing into massive river systems and physically turning turbines inside giant concrete dams.
Exactly. It relies entirely on gravity and water. It is clean, it is renewable, and most crucially for this economic equation, it provides a massive base load of power. Because the rivers are just constantly flowing, the power generation is incredibly steady.
So there aren't massive spikes.
Right. They do not have to scramble to buy exorbitant natural gas on the spot market during peak summer demand, which, as we know, is the primary driver of California's rolling blackouts and massive rate hikes. The local Bellingham area utilities basically pass these incredibly low, stable hydro rates directly to the consumer.
Give me the actual kilowatt hour difference. Like, what are we talking about here?
Okay, in California, under PG&E or Southern California Edison, you might be paying 34 cents per kilowatt hour, and that can easily surge past 45 cents during peak summer hours.
Right.
In Bellingham, under Puget Sound Energy, you are paying approximately 11 cents per kilowatt hour.
11 cents. That is literally a third of the price.
It's massive.
So to translate that into a monthly utility bill for a normal family,
the source notes that a typical $300 a month summer PG&E bill in California becomes a $90 a month bill in Bellingham. When you multiply that across 12 months, you are saving an extra $2,500 a year just on keeping the lights on, running your appliances, and keeping the house comfortable. It is this permanent economic moat against utility inflation.
Okay, so let's just summarize the math so far. You have the $700,000 duffel bag of trapped equity converted to pure cash. You have a $24,000 to $50,000 annual raise from the income tax elimination.
Yeah.
You have cheaper car insurance, cheaper gas, and unbelievably cheap hydroelectric power. I mean, the scales are tipping so violently toward Washington that the table is about to break.
The math is very, very heavy.
But I have a massive logistical question here.
Okay, let's hear it.
If I am a Californian sitting on $1.5 million of real estate and I want to execute this, California doesn't just, you know, wave goodbye, right? Like, the franchise tax board doesn't just say, oh, you moved to Washington. Have fun. Enjoy the hydropower. Keep all your capital gains. How does California tax the exit?
What's fascinating here is how often people get this specific mechanism completely wrong. And the source issues an incredibly strict warning about it.
Mm.
The short answer is, California will aggressively tax capital gains on California-sited real estate completely, regardless of where your current primary residence is.
Because the asset itself is physically bolted to California soil?
Precisely. It is considered California-sourced income. It does not matter if your new driver's license says Washington. It doesn't matter if you registered to vote in Bellingham. If you sell a house in San Jose, California is taxing the gain.
So how do you actually protect the capital? I mean, what do people do?
Well, this is why the source is adamant that you cannot wing this. You absolutely must hire a dual state CPA. There are mechanisms to shield the money, specifically the Section 121 primary residence exclusion, which can shield up to $500,000 of capital gains for a married couple filing jointly.
Okay, that's a good chunk.
It is, but the rules around what constitutes a primary residence and the timeline of when you establish domicile in Washington versus when you close the sale in California are incredibly complex.
Because domicile isn't just about where you sleep at night, right? It's about intent.
Exactly. The Franchise Tax Board will look at where your bank branches are, where your doctors are located, where your cars are registered. The timing is paramount here. Do you move first and sell second? Or do you sell first and move second?
Oh, I hadn't even thought of the order.
Right. The tax implications shift radically based on dates. The broker's absolute directive is, do not list your house on Zillow, pack a truck, and hope the math works out in April. You need professional guidance to thread that needle long before you put a for sale sign in the yard.
All right, so let's assume you, the listener, you hire the dual state CPA, you thread the needle perfectly, you secure the equity, you eliminate your mortgage, and you are bathing in cheap, glorious hydroelectricity.
Right. Living the dream.
If the math is this undeniable, why isn't the entire population of California moving north? Why is anyone left in Los Angeles at all?
Because, as it turns out, You are paying for this immense financial freedom with sunlight.
And there it is, the reality check. The big catch.
We have to talk about the climate. This is the great filter. This is the single factor that decides whether a transplant thrives or flees back south. The source is very blunt about this. I tell people the truth about the weather.
Okay, well, let's do the good news first. Because the Pacific Northwest has a reputation for having some of the most beautiful summers on Earth.
The summers aren't just beautiful, they're spectacular. The broker actually calls them the best argument anyone has ever made for Pacific Northwest living. From late June through early October, Bellingham is absolute paradise. Mm. The daily highs sit comfortably in the low to mid 70s. Because of the northern latitude, I mean, you are incredibly close to the Canadian border. You have daylight until almost 10 p.m. in late June.
The Pampy.
Yeah, it stays light forever.
Yeah.
You have cool breezes coming off Bellingham Bay. The water is swimmable. The mountain biking trails on Galbraith Mountain are dry and world-class. The forests are just lush and green.
And crucially, you are escaping the psychological terror of the California fire season.
That is a massive, often under-discussed factor in this whole migration. Bellingham is mostly shielded by the geography of the Cascade Mountain Range. While they might get, you know, a few hazy, smoky days in August if the wind patterns blow exactly wrong from Canada or eastern Washington, it is absolutely nothing like the brutal, apocalyptic, weeks-long smoke events that California has endured over the last decade.
Right.
There are no rolling power shutoffs to prevent wildfires. There are no severe drought conversations or harsh water restrictions.
The source actually mentions that people genuinely cry when they describe their first Bellingham summer.
They do.
It's like this emotional release, the relief of just being able to breathe clean air, sit outside on your deck at 9 p.m. in a t-shirt, and watch the sun slowly set over the islands without checking an air quality app.
It is a profound emotional high. But then the calendar turns to November.
Ah. Then we arrive at the part of the year that actually tests your resolve, the winter.
Right. First, we need to dispel the myth of what winter actually means in Bellingham. People here near the Canadian border and they immediately picture blizzards, Arctic tundra, and digging their car out of snowbanks.
That's what I pictured.
Yeah, but that is entirely inaccurate. The winters are surprisingly mild. The average lows sit in the low 30s. Snow falls maybe two or three times a year at sea level, and it rarely sticks around for more than 48 hours.
So you aren't waking up at 5 a.m. to shovel a driveway just to get your kids to school?
Very rarely. I mean, you need a high-quality raincoat and a good pair of waterproof boots, but you aren't physically fighting the snow. Now, ironically, Mount Baker, which is just 30 miles east of the city, holds the world record for the most snow recorded in a single season.
Really?
Yeah. So if you want to ski or snowboard from November through May, you have world-class, incredibly beat powder right in your backyard.
Yeah.
But down in the city of Bellingham, snow is a novelty, not a nuisance.
Okay, so if it's not the freezing cold and it's not the snow, what is the true adversary here? Why is the winter so difficult for Californians?
The gray, capital T, capital G. The gray is the real climate fact you absolutely must internalize and respect if you're going to survive this relocation.
Let's look at the actual meteorological data, because the numbers tell a pretty stark story.
Yeah, Bellingham receives about 2,000 hours of sunshine a year. To put that in perspective, San Francisco gets roughly 3,060 hours. Los Angeles gets 3,250.
Oh.
Phoenix is up near 3,870.
Yeah.
So mathematically, Bellingham gets roughly half the annual sunshine of Southern California.
Half. You are cutting your daily lux exposure by 50%.
And crucially, that sunshine is not distributed evenly throughout the year.
Right, because of the amazing summers.
Exactly. From November through February, you are going to experience weeks, literally unbroken, 14-day stretches of solid overcast skies. The temperature will be a very manageable 40 to 50 degrees, but the sky stays a uniform slate gray.
Just gray all the time.
All the time. Because you are so far north, the days are incredibly short. The sun might rise past 7:30 a.m. and set before 4:30 p.m. And the rain isn't dramatic, sweeping thunderstorms that clear the air. It's just a steady, soft, relentless, misty drizzle.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me, because it's an aesthetic shift just as much as a meteorological one. You are trading the blinding, saturated, high-contrast glare of a Hollywood blockbuster for the moody, quiet, washed-out palette of an indie film.
I love that comparison.
You know, everything is softer, the edges are blurred, but the master lighting switch has just been turned down to 30%.
That is a perfect analogy, and the broker's guide is incredibly clear on this point. The gray is the make or break factor. It dictates whether a transplant will survive to year three.
Year three. Why year three?
Well, in year one, it's a novelty. You buy the cute rain boots, you drink a lot of local coffee, you light candles, it feels cozy. In year two, the novelty sort of wears off and it gets a little harder. By year three, the glow of the spectacular summer has completely faded, and you have to truly reckon with the biological reality of enduring months of low light.
How do Californians actually cope with this? Their biology is practically calibrated to 250 days of bright, piercing glare. I know for a fact that if I don't see the sun for 3 weeks, my brain chemistry starts telling me the world is ending.
Right.
The lack of light just disrupts your circadian rhythm. Your body doesn't know when to shut off melatonin production and your serotonin drops. Do they just hide away for 4 months?
You cannot just tough it out. You have to actively scientifically manage it. If you have ever experienced seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, the source warns that you must take this climate transition extremely seriously. Surviving the gray requires a dedicated, localized survival kit.
Okay, what are the mechanics of this survival kit? What goes into it?
First, daylight lamps. These are high-intensity, 10,000 lux light therapy boxes. You don't just turn them on in the background. You sit physically close to them every single morning for 30 minutes to trick your brain's photoreceptors into suppressing melatonin and producing serotonin.
You literally have to manufacture your own dawn.
You do. Second, aggressive vitamin D3 supplementation. You simply are not synthesizing enough vitamin D from the sun during the winter months, and the deficiency will crash your energy levels and your immune system.
Okay, and the third tool in the kit.
The almost mandatory February escape flight.
Tell me about this.
The source notes that the most successful transplants actively budget for a trip south every February or March. They use Bellingham International Airport, which, by the way, is incredibly easy to navigate, and they fly straight to Seattle and connect directly to Phoenix, Las Vegas, San Diego, or back to SFO.
Ah, I see.
They go bake in the desert sun for a week to completely break up the winter gloom, reset their biology, and then they fly back to finish out the spring.
It's like a prescribed dose of radiation. You just go get irradiated in the desert for a week so you have enough solar energy stored in your cells to make it to July.
Exactly. The broker states plainly, we're not pretending it's California. You are making an explicit, clear-eyed trade. You are trading 250 days of bright glare for a softer, quieter, year-round palette and a community that bursts into vibrant, frantic, joyous motion the very second the summer sun finally breaks through the clouds.
Okay, so let's say you're a listener right now. You've accepted the math. The prospect of erasing your mortgage is calling your name. You've mentally prepared for the indie film weather palette. You have your 10,000 lux lamp on order.
You're ready to go.
Right. But how do you actually execute this? Because the sheer logistics of buying a $700,000 house 900 miles away without making a grueling weekend commute your new part-time job sounds like an absolute nightmare.
It certainly used to be. Historically, relocation required massive amounts of physical travel. But the mechanics of remote real estate buying have evolved drastically, hyper-accelerated by the remote work boom back in 2020. The source reveals a staggering statistic. Roughly 40% of this specific broker's buyers are coming from out of state.
40%. That is a massive chunk of the entire local market operating via remote control.
It is. And here is the truly shocking part of that data. Of that 40%, roughly half of them never physically visit Bellingham before making a binding offer on a home.
I'm sorry, what? They are dropping $750,000 on a piece of property they have never physically stood inside.
Sight unseen. Entirely virtual. The process has been rigorously systemized to allow for this, exactly because flying up every weekend to look at houses is physically and financially unsustainable.
Walk me through the mechanics of this step-by-step virtual process, because my anxiety is spiking just thinking about it.
I get it.
I mean, I can barely pick a movie on Netflix without watching the trailer 3 times, reading the reviews, and checking the Rotten Tomatoes score. Dropping $700,000 on a house based on an iPhone video seems utterly terrifying to me. How do you trust the vibe of a street through a screen?
It's tough.
Like, Zillow photos are notorious for using ultra-wide lenses to make a tiny closet look like a ballroom, and they intentionally crop out the giant cell tower in the neighbor's yard or the industrial park across the street. How do you overcome the sensory void of a screen?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture of remote technology, solving that exact sensory void is what separates a standard real estate agent from a relocation specialist.
Hmm.
It starts with a 45-minute Zoom discovery call.
Okay.
This isn't just a checklist of bed and bath counts. It is a deep psychological unpacking of your lifestyle goals. Do you want a view of the bay? Do you want 2 acres of forest? Do you need high walkability to coffee shops? What are your school district priorities? By the end of that 45 minutes, the broker has narrowed the entire county down to 3 to 5 specific neighborhoods that align with your California expectations.
Okay, so you establish the target zones. Then what happens?
Then you get on the daily listing alerts. The Bellingham market moves fast, so speed is everything. The moment a promising listing hits the market, the broker is physically at the property within 24 hours. They initiate a live FaceTime, Zoom, or Google Meet call with you.
Like a private virtual tour.
Exactly. And they don't just show you the pretty parts. They walk you through every single room live.
Mm.
They open the closets. They point the camera under the sinks to look for water damage. They show you the layout in real time so you can actually direct them. You know, hey, turn around. What's out that window? Can you point the camera at the ceiling in the guest room?
That helps with the house itself, sure, but what about the context? What about the cell tower or the loud highway just beyond the tree line?
To solve the contextual problem, this specific broker utilizes advanced technology. First, for homes with views or acreage, they use an FAA-licensed drone.
Oh, wow.
They will fly a drone around the perimeter of the property. This gives you a true orthographic view. You can see the exact property lines, the topography of the lot, the condition of the roof, and exactly what borders the property from the air. You can literally see if there is a busy road hidden just behind the trees.
So you get a literal bird's eye view that completely defeats the deceptive cropping of a standard Zillow photo.
Exactly. And second, to capture the street level texture, the broker records a 5-minute continuous neighborhood orientation video.
Continuous.
No cuts, no editing. They just walk the surrounding blocks, narrating the environment. You see who is mowing their lawn, where the kids are playing, what kinds of cars are parked on the street, how wide the sidewalks are, and how close the nearest grocery store actually is. Mm. It fills in the atmospheric environmental details that static photos completely miss.
That is incredibly smart. It really grounds the physical structure in its actual reality. And then for the legal closing.
Washington State allows fully remote digital closings via email and mobile notaries.
Yeah.
You do not need to sit in a stuffy title office with a wet pen. You can wire the funds, sign the PDFs via DocuSign, and legally take possession of the home without ever boarding a plane.
Okay, but what about the buyers who say, absolutely not. I need to smell the house. I need to walk the floorboards before I wire my life savings. The people who just must visit.
For those buyers, the broker orchestrates what they affectionately call the exhausting inspection trip.
Sounds fun.
It is a hyper-condensed, highly curated Friday to Sunday visit. You aren't aimlessly wandering around looking at cafes. You are executing a surgical strike of data gathering. You will do 8 properly vetted showings in 2 days. You will physically drive the routes from the potential house to the local schools during morning rush hour.
Right, because 2 miles on a map can mean a 5-minute breeze or a 25-minute nightmare, depending on the traffic lights, the school zones, and the hills.
Precisely. You also spend an hour visiting the local hospital, Peace Health St. Joseph. The broker makes sure clients understand what it means that Peace Health is a level 3 trauma center.
Wait, let's explain that for a second. A level 3 trauma center versus what Californians might be used to.
Well, if you live in Los Angeles or the Bay Area, you are likely within 15 minutes of a massive level I trauma center like Cedars-Sinai or Stanford that can handle open heart surgery, severe multi-vehicle trauma, and complex neurosurgery 24/7. Peace Health in Bellingham is fantastic, but it is level 3. They can stabilize major trauma, but for highly complex, life-threatening specialty care, patients are often stabilized and then life-flighted by helicopter down to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle, which is the region's level I center.
Oh, that's a big distinction.
It is. If you are an aging transplant with complex medical needs, understanding the logistical difference is paramount.
That is exactly the kind of unvarnished truth you need before moving. It's a 3-day intensive boot camp so that when you fly back to California on Sunday night, you have 0 lingering questions. You know exactly what you are buying.
Exactly.
Okay, so you signed the remote docs or you survived the exhausting inspection weekend. The equity cash is safely in your bank account. Your nervous system is slowly beginning to adapt. But where's the moving truck actually pulling up? This is where the rubber meets the road. Let's map these California vibes onto specific Bellingham zip codes.
Okay, let's do it.
If I am coming from, say, the peninsula in the Bay Area or the West Hills in Los Angeles, where do I fit in?
The source breaks down the specific Bellingham neighborhoods that California buyers naturally gravitate toward, translating them into direct California analogs. The first and most prominent is Edgemoor.
Edgemoor? What is the profile there?
Edgemoor is the luxury bluff home neighborhood. It sits high above Bellingham Bay, offering sweeping, panoramic, multi-million dollar water views. It carries the highest median price in the county.
Got it.
The homes are often custom built, the lots are large and manicured, and it is highly residential and very quiet. The broker explicitly equates the Edgemoor lifestyle to the peninsula in the Bay Area or the West Hills in Los Angeles. If you're looking for prestige, intense privacy, and dramatic architectural views, this is your landing spot.
Okay, but what if I don't want a massive, secluded bluff home? What if my idea of luxury is walking out my front door to get an artisanal cortado in the morning? What if I'm coming from Berkeley or Pasadena Old Town, where density and charm are the main draws?
Then you are looking squarely at Fairhaven.
Fairhaven.
Fairhaven is the historic, highly walkable Victorian district. It is the cultural beating heart for people who want urban density without the skyscrapers. It features the best cafe culture, independent bookstores, and boutique restaurants in the city.
Oh, nice.
You were looking at high-end condos, townhomes, and smaller, impeccably restored historic homes. The primary draw is that you can leave your car parked for 3 days at a time and simply walk to dinner, walk to the waterfront boardwalk, and walk to the trailheads.
That sounds idyllic. It's like Berkeley without the crushing Berkeley property taxes.
Exactly. And then for the buyer who wants the stunning view of the water, but perhaps has a slightly lower budget than Edgemoor, or who just wants a bit more quirky architectural variety, there is South Hill.
South Hill? What's the vibe there?
It's an older, established neighborhood positioned on the steep slope directly above the bay. Because of the elevation, the upper streets offer incredible, unobstructed views.
Mm-hmm.
The homes have real character. A mix of historic craftsmen, mid-century moderns, and funky 1970s builds. And crucially, it still maintains steep but manageable walkability down into the Fairhaven district. It is the perfect middle ground between the sheer, isolated luxury of Edgemoor and the dense, bustling walkability of Fairhaven.
So what does this all mean for you? We have these neat little geographic translations. Edgemoor is the peninsula, Fairhaven is Pasadena. But even if Fairhaven looks a bit like Pasadena Old Town or Edgemoor feels like the West Hills, isn't there still going to be a massive systemic culture shock? I mean, life outside the four walls of the house has to be vastly different.
Unquestionably. And the guy is incredibly upfront about the broader lifestyle shift. The biggest, most jarring shock to the California nervous system is the tempo. The broker estimates that Bellingham operates at roughly 70% the tempo of the Bay Area and maybe 60% the tempo of Los Angeles.
What does a 60% tempo actually look like in practice? How does that manifest on a random Tuesday morning?
It manifests in the complete lack of urgency. Nobody is rushing. People routinely take business meetings standing up at a local coffee shop rather than in formal scheduled Zoom rooms.
I can't even imagine that in LA.
Right. The local gyms and trailheads are packed at 7 a.m. because the culture prioritizes outdoor physical health over answering early morning emails. And crucially, things close.
What do you mean, close?
The 7 p.m. dinner reservation might be the absolute last seating of the night, and the restaurant is locking its doors at 9 p.m.
So you aren't grabbing a table at 10:30 p.m. after a show?
Absolutely not. Stores close on Sundays more often than you'd expect. The traffic, even at what locals consider absolute peak rush hour, it's considered gentle, free-flowing movement by California standards. The source uses a great, highly relatable benchmark. The grocery line at the local Hagen supermarket on a Saturday at noon might have 8 people in it.
8 people?
Compare that to the 40 people stacked up, white-knuckling their baskets at a Trader Joe's in Los Angeles.
Just visualizing that difference in the grocery line lowers my blood pressure. But there are sacrifices, right? You don't just magically lose the stress. You lose some of the amenities that generated that stress in the first place.
Yes, of course. The transplant must permanently sacrifice the 24/7 convenience culture. You lose the ability to get incredible, authentic Vietnamese pho at 1 a.m. You lose In-N-Out Burger entirely.
Tragic.
It is. You lose the massive casual diversity and the sheer overwhelming culinary variety of a major global city like Los Angeles or San Francisco. Bellingham has 200 very good restaurants, but it doesn't have 2,000. Some cultural events, major concerts, and specialized art tours simply skip the Bellingham market entirely.
Now, you can drive 45 minutes north across the border to Vancouver, British Columbia, for a weekend of massive big city culture, international food, and international flights, but it's not right outside your door.
Right. Vancouver is an excursion. It's a planned Saturday, not a spontaneous Tuesday night dinner. But what you consistently, undeniably gain in return for sacrificing that convenience is time. The hour and 20 minutes a day you used to spend white-knuckling your steering wheel in stop-and-go commute traffic, that vanishes. The 5 hours a week you spend just navigating crowded parking lots to run basic errands, that collapses to 2 hours. You are suddenly handed back massive blocks of your own life.
And we come right back to that 4 to 6 month timeline. Your nervous system resets because the ambient atmospheric pressure of the environment fundamentally drops. The constant low-grade financial and logistical pressure cooker releases its steam.
Exactly. The friction of simply existing is reduced to a fraction of what it was in California.
So if we pull all of this together, if we synthesize this entire deep dive, moving from California to Bellingham is not just a real estate transaction. It is an explicit, highly calculated trade. You are walking up to the counter of life and saying, I will trade you my high-speed convenience, my blinding year-round sunshine, and my infinite culinary variety. And in return, you give me physical space, immense financial freedom, soft rain, and most importantly, time.
That is the exact mathematical and emotional equation.
Mm.
And for the people who can make peace with the gray skies and the slower tempo, that trade is the best decision they ever make.
Which leaves you, yes, you listening to this right now, with a lingering thought to chew on. Something beyond just the spreadsheet math of trapped equity and tax rates. We've talked about the financial arbitrage of this move, but there is a larger, almost invisible clock ticking in the background of this whole conversation.
Yeah, there is.
Right now, in the mid-20s, this California to Bellingham pipeline works because there is still a massive price discrepancy. But as remote work remains entrenched, and as the climate continues to warm, pushing more and more people away from the drought and fire zones of the South and toward the cooler, water-rich zones of the Pacific Northwest, how long does this geographic arbitrage actually last?
That's the real question.
Are we looking at a permanent life hack? Or are Californians currently squeezing through a temporary closing window? Because if thousands of people keep executing this exact trade, bringing their massive tech equity with them, Bellingham won't be the escape from the Bay Area. In 20 years, it might just become the next Bay Area.
It is a profound structural question. You aren't just timing the real estate market. You might be timing the grand climate migration.
We want to thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Whether you are actively packing your bags, calling a dual state CPA, or just enjoying the daydream on your commute, keep looking at the honest math, and we will see you next time.